From KUAZ Radio in Tucson, I'm Mark McLemore, and this is Arizona Spotlight. Coming up on today's show, Christopher Conover will take a look at the state of healthcare for children in Arizona. Hear music made by one of artist Glenn Wyant's homemade instruments as he talks about using sound across borders of all kinds. Pam White will help us to decipher data from a new cancer study and a preview of this week's celebration at Hotel Congress, along with music from Al Perry. That's coming up next here on Arizona Spotlight. There are changes coming to the federal program known in Arizona as Kids Care, which helps provide health insurance for children. As Christopher Conover reports, Congress and the White House are setting up for a showdown over these changes.
Health insurance can be expensive, so to help children, the federal government funds the state's Children's Health Insurance Program, or SCHIP. Here in Arizona, it's called Kids Care, and it's designed to help families who make too much money to qualify for access but can't afford to pay for private health insurance. Veronica is sitting in a treatment room at the El Rio Health Center with her daughter, and she's thankful for Kids Care.
We're a family of six, and we're going to be paying like $1,000 a month. And that's really expensive, and that's about the cheapest that we found. So luckily, we qualified for Kids Care. And right now we're paying like $145 a month compared to $1,000.
But the federal funding for the popular program is up for reauthorization in Washington, and the government is tightening the rules, much to the dismay of pediatrician Dr. Andrew Arthur, who says health insurance is critical for kids.
That people who don't have insurance, who are working, and don't have insurance for their children are less likely to come in regularly for their well child care, for their children's immunizations, for preventive care, because all those things are quite expensive, and sometimes their parents are making decisions between do I pay for food, do I pay for rent versus do I pay for insurance for something that might happen.
Dr. Arthur says children with insurance also get more consistent care.
One of the things that helps provide better quality care is for a child to have a regular medical home, a medical provider who they know, they trust, their family trusts, who knows that child very well and will be able to pick up things that someone who has only seen them once in their life will not be able to pick up.
I've had Dr. Ahern, my oldest daughter is 15, and we've had her for that long, and I just love her. I trust her. You know, she knows my kids. She knows how they can get sick from one minute to the next, and, you know, she's there even when we're put in the hospital. She's there helping us with whatever we need.
Without Kids Care, the medical costs Veronica and her family have would be prohibitive.
We had to have insurance because of the medication that they're on. My son was on neutropenia shots, injections, and it's over $3,000 a month that his medication is, so we don't have a choice. They need to be covered by something.
The U.S. House of Representatives passed legislation to expand the SCHIP program. Congresswoman Gabrielle Gifford says the legislation, known as CHAMP, is critical.
This CHAMP Act would expand coverage, not complete universal coverage for kids, but would expand it by about 6 million children across the country. And that's very different than the Senate version, which makes an expansion, but not nearly to the extent that the House version does. Don't forget, the SCHIP program, which we know is Kids Care here, is going to expire at the end of September.
Right now, President Bush is promising to veto both versions of the CHAMP Act. For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Christopher Conover.
The sounds you are hearing are produced by our next guest, Glenn Wyant, using a unique musical instrument of his own design. It's called the Blue Blue. It was named by his daughter. Glenn is an artist and musician based in Tucson, but his work has taken him on many journeys. Recently, he was involved in a project in Knoxville, Tennessee, that included teaching kids about his found object aesthetic. Thanks very much for giving us a recital on the instrument. I think first thing we should do is probably explain to people what it was that you were playing.
That was called Blue Blue. It's an instrument of original design that was named by my daughter. What it is basically is a piece of a curtain rod with a large tin can resonator. The tin can has three holes in it where the wires come out. You can change the octaves by manipulating the strings, which are basically guitar wires, guitar strings, which are steel wires, and loops from tape, old loops that the tape was on. Yeah, and you can roll them down, roll them up to get more of a vibration, get more of a drone sound to them. There's all kinds of things you can do.
So we're looking at the Blue Blue here on the table in front of us, and I have to ask, Glenn, there are a lot of musical instruments in the world already. Mm-hmm. What is it that inspires you to make your own?
It's empowering, I think, to actually create an instrument of original design, decide what the rules are for playing it, what sounds are pleasing to you as an individual, and then finding ways of using those instruments to communicate with other musicians. But at its heart, I think, is a personal philosophy that I've been sort of developing over the years, where if each person was able to build an instrument of original design and then find a way of communicating with another musician, then it kind of throws out any of the biases of language, gender, race. All those kind of things go out the door, nationality, even your economic status. It doesn't matter. You don't have to have a lot of money to buy an instrument. You can build from what you have. It comes back to my daughter. When she was born, I was playing saxophone. I was playing a tenor sax. I was playing very loud. It would wake her up, basically, in the evenings when she was sleeping. And so I started working with microsounds, and I wound up developing systems for using contact microphones to play very small sounds that you wouldn't notice normally. Like the work that I did with the Border Project, the Anta Project, that was amplifying sounds that you would not normally hear. So that the microphone was attached to the wall, and you know, you'd see me bowing the wall, but you wouldn't necessarily hear the wall resonating the way it was. But then if you put the headphones on, you could hear what I was working with. And so through my daughter trying to be quiet and let her sleep, I found this whole world of sound that was hidden.
So let's go back and talk about the Anta Project that you referred to a moment ago. This is something that got you a lot of attention.
Well, the idea was it was spring of 2006, and I was trying to come up with a new project. And I've been working with swing sets. I've played bridges. I've played all sorts of, just, you know, with the Snake Bridge, for example. I did a little practice on it. And Snake Bridge does not have good acoustic properties. I've tried playing it. It's very, very solid. But the overpasses, like if you go along the Rito River, they're wonderful. The steel girders have really nice sounds to them. And so I was starting to get into these ideas of what could I play that would be significant. And so I started to think about the border, and that was becoming really hot at that time. People were debating from all over the country, and it was resonating with the world. And I was thinking, well, you know, I wonder if it's possible, because it became such a symbol for acrimony and division, if it's possible to sort of change the symbolism of it and how to do that through music. I had no idea what the wall itself would sound like between Nogales, Sonora, and Nogales, Arizona. And so it became a process of really listening with headphones on. I had a contact microphone, which is a lot like a stethoscope, a little metal piece that went into a compression sustained volume pedal that really boosts the sounds hugely. And then that went to a very simple Sony recorder that you'd use for recording like a lecture or something like that. Very basic. I think all told, I had about $100 or so worth of equipment on me. And so what I began doing was finding spots in the wall, such as seams and things like that, that would have interesting sounds. I also used the wire fences. I used water jugs. And I tried to find things that were symbolic of immigration that might resonate with the rest of the country. But at the same time, I wanted to create an ambient work that would be a travel piece that would sort of give you an idea of what it's like to look at the U.S. border from the Mexico side with the helicopters and the spotlights and everything else, and then sort of that migrational coming into the U.S. and then having this open road. There are people who are pro or anti-immigration. This isn't meant to be a statement either direction. It's actually meant to be an awareness piece to have people start questioning to know about what's going on.
Do you think that there's a musician in everybody?
I would say so. Absolutely. Yeah. Through the work that I was doing in Knoxville, we went out to some of the rural Head Start facilities, and the kids brought in all sorts of found objects that they had. And what the idea was, we were going to do some seminars where they would learn how to build instruments. And so we had tin cans and we had water bowls, and we kind of walked through some of the basics of percussion, you know, what would make a good drum, what makes a good... And then they started to come up with instruments that were their own names. You know, like one boy took a a water jug, a huge water bottle, cut the end of it off, attached a hose to it, and would blare like these Godzilla kind of sounds into it. And it was, I forget what he called it, but it was like that was his instrument. He invented it. It was his thing. This was his sound. And then there were some girls that were just like wailing away on these cans. And at first they were very aggressive and loud, but then they started listening to each other and slowing down. They got rid of their anxiety. And suddenly we had this orchestra playing instruments that, that these children had invented. When I say children, I mean like up to 12, 13 years old. And then we decided to come up with a narrative for it. Just like the Anthem Project was a narrative of a migrant's journey into the U.S., the what we did, we decided to do a summer rainstorm, began with like, you know, very quiet, had some crickets and bullfrogs, and being in the rural area, they did really great with that kind of stuff. And then the rain came, and then the thunder, and really cacophonous type of piece, and then the calm after the storm. And we did this for about 20 minutes, and it was just a really nice piece. And when it was done, you could tell the kids were all on the same level. They knew when the silence was coming. They knew when the crescendos were coming in. And it was all done as a form of communication. It was musical. It was there was really very little verbal communication, and yet they were all telling a story.
Well, you've got a lot of different projects going on right now. What's the next thing that you're excited about doing?
When the Anthem Project came out, Casa de Cultura in Mexico contacted me through Tola Yankee, which is a bunch of artists down in Mexico. The artists from Tola Yankee and I have come up with the idea of actually affixing a huge kalimba on the Mexican side of the wall, transforming the wall itself into a resonator. The idea is to have this massive kalimba on the wall that anybody could play.
Okay, and a kalimba is?
It's a thumb piano. Usually it's got, you know, five or six different tines on it, and they're tuned. But the idea is that we're going to try and get this sculpture up and also collect some oral histories of people on both sides of the wall and their relationships to the wall. And then in the winter, once things cool off, I am hoping to build a new, very large instrument in the backyard. I haven't figured out what it is yet, but there's an accumulation of stuff on the side of the garage that needs to be addressed at some point in time. And so that will be something else as well. So.
And do you anticipate that your daughter will have naming privileges on this new instrument?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it goes with the territory, and she gets to name the stuff.
Great. Thanks for coming down to the studio, Glenn.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
We have links to more of Glenn Wyant's work and music online at KUAZ.org. Coming up in the second half of Arizona Spotlight, for cancer survivors, watching what they eat can become second nature. A new study looks at the results. And this weekend, Club Congress hosts a celebration of music and barbecue, all happening for a good cause. We'll find out more here on Arizona Spotlight. Next, Pam White brings us the results of a study looking at diet and what part it may play in preventing the recurrence of breast cancer.
It was called the Women's Healthy Eating and Living Study, or WELL Study. It lasted 8 years and included more than 3,000 breast cancer survivors to find out what effect diet has on the recurrence of breast cancer.
So the purpose was to test the idea that if breast cancer survivors, after finishing their treatment, went on a very healthy plant-based diet. It had 5 vegetables a day, 3 fruits a day, plus they were juicing, so they were making fresh vegetable juice.
Dr. Cindy Thompson is with the U of A Department of Nutritional Sciences and the Arizona Cancer Center. She's a WELL study author. The findings were recently published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. One group of participants followed the five-a-day guidelines promoted by the USDA. The other group's diet required a much higher intake of fruits and vegetables.
The average woman was eating 7 fruits and vegetables a day when they came on trial. And we compared that to these women who were up around 12 to 13 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. And in the end, the survival was the same, regardless of whether you ate 7 a day or 13 a day. Now, one of the important messages we need to get across is that we didn't compare 2.5 a day, which is where most Americans are, to 13 a day. We compared 7 a day to 13 a day. And there was no additional benefit from pushing a little bit further.
But there was significant proof that women who had been eating healthy even before the study began had less recurrence of cancer.
We did an analysis on the women's blood levels of carotenoids, and carotenoid blood levels tell us how many fruits and vegetables they're eating. And what we found was the women who had the highest amount of carotenoids in their blood at the beginning of the study, so before anybody ate anything differently, were protected in terms of breast cancer recurrence. They had about 24% lower recurrence rate if they had that higher carotenoid level. And that is very convincing that fruits and vegetables do play a role.
Dr. Thompson says research has already shown that a diet rich in fruits and vegetables is important in reducing cancer risk, especially vegetables.
They also have a lot of what we call phytochemicals. We also call them bioactive food compounds. Many of those act as antioxidants, natural antioxidants, similar to vitamin C. Many of them have been shown, if you put them in culture with cancer cells, to kill cancer cells.
But exactly how many fruits and vegetables do we need to eat to get the protective benefits? Dr. Thompson hopes to find that out in her next study.
We're going to be taking overweight postmenopausal women, and we're going to be putting them on 2-a-day, which is more the American average intake, versus 5-a-day versus 10-a-day. And we'll find out, is there a dose response? Is there a certain dose that seems to put you over the edge in terms of beneficial effects? So we're really excited to find out.
The Arizona Cancer Center was one of 6 institutions in the country to enroll women in the study. Of the more than 400 Arizona participants, most of them were from here in Tucson.
We also asked them, why are you joining the study? And the number one response was because we want this information for future generations. You know, whether it helps me or not doesn't matter. What I want to know is there information out there that can help not just my daughter, but anyone's daughter or niece or, you know, future generations of young women.
Some headlines about the study results, Dr. Thompson says, were misleading, suggesting that fruits and vegetables didn't have an effect on cancer outcomes. But the message, she says, is clearly the opposite, and fruits and vegetables are crucial in cancer prevention.
It's estimated that about 30% of cancers could be prevented through diet. Having an unhealthy diet isn't going to be a guarantee of getting cancer, but what we do know is that eating a healthy diet reduces that risk. The other thing, I myself am a cancer survivor, and people say to me, oh, but you know, you eat so healthy and you exercise, how can that be? And you know, my theory is, well, I had cancer, yes, but I probably put it off for a decade or more by eating a healthy diet. So I may still have gotten a diagnosis, but I certainly delayed it, and my ability to get through that event was probably enhanced by the fact that I was healthy and practicing a healthy lifestyle.
For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Pam White.
We've got links to the results of the study and more information online at KUAZ.org. In downtown Tucson this weekend, Club Congress is hosting another celebration of both the hotel's birthday and of Tucson music. HOCO 2007 features over 40 bands, including many classic acts who have reunited for the show. There are also some plans afoot that may change the way Tucson treats its musicians in the future. Here to tell us more is David Slutz from Hotel Congress and local music legend Al Perry.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
So, Dave, what's going on at Hotel Congress this weekend?
Well, it's the first annual HOCO Festival. It's actually our third annual. We've just rechristened it the HOCO. So it's HOCO 2007 this year. And it looks like it is an annual event because it's been so much fun and such a success. Well, we have about 40 bands, a dozen movies, a couple barbecues, a lot of cool reunions, all sorts of fun stuff.
There's a class of 87 stage going on this year for bands that were together 20 years ago.
And a class of 77, so bands are here 30 years ago. And a class of 97 and a current class, yeah.
What do you have going on this weekend, Darrell?
I do a barbecue traditionally every Saturday from 5 o'clock to 9 o'clock. I host it, and it's just it ends up just being a big jam and just a really fun thing.
This Sunday also, there's a special purpose to the event. Can you tell us a little bit about TAMA?
The Tucson Artists and Musicians Health Alliance is a group that myself and a few other art leaders in town and a couple state representatives put together to promote and advocate for low cost and for underinsured musicians and artists and basically any freelance folk out there. We're working hard on it. It's a really great organization, and we want to draw a lot of attention to it this Sunday.
What was the inspiration for starting an organization like this?
Well, I've been kind of working on something like this for a year or so, and the deeper I got into it, sort of model it after Sweet Relief. It's a thing Victoria Williams had come about when they diagnosed her with MS about 92. They put out a big record with Pearl Jam and all this thing, and they raised so much money, they realized they could start this little foundation. And what it was a vehicle to be able to get musicians who have no insurance, get them some money right away. What if we could do this in our own community? Well, it's really difficult to do. And the more you get into it, the more you try to hook into the healthcare system, it's just diabolical. It's really hard. But as I was doing this, Anne Marie from MoCA, the Museum of Contemporary Art, was thinking about doing a similar kind of thing. She sent me an email. I realized they're trying to put something together. A few of us got together and said, why don't we form this thing? The health seems to be the pressing concern, and everyone got on board, and it's just taken off. It's doing really well, and there's a lot of passionate people involved right now.
Do you have any examples of other places where something like this is working out?
In my research, the only town that really has something really worked out well is Austin. They have the HAM. It's the Health Alliance of Austin Musicians. And it's backed by the city. They have tied into all sorts of hospitals. And it does very well. And it's become sort of a model for us, too.
At this point, do you have any idea how someone would qualify for support from TAMA?
That's the most difficult thing. And that's one thing we're taking a lot of time to figure out. Vetting that is one of the most difficult decisions down the line, because who determines and how do you determine who's an artist, who's a musician, and at what level do they qualify? That's a very difficult question. And Sweet Relief has had to figure out this arbitrary figure for that. And they had to do it to find something, but it's hard. That's going to be a question we haven't answered yet, and it's coming down the road, though, pretty soon. So,
Al, what kind of impact do you think that something like TAMA would have on the local musician scene?
Oh, it'd be fantastic.
Well, think about it. Right now, one of our leading musicians in town just had a huge, terrible diabetic problem, almost went into a coma. Another guy we know just got hit by a train. I mean, these are uninsured artists. And because they've chosen the lifestyle to become an artist and a creator, they don't qualify for health insurance. And if we're a community that nurtures that kind of thing, this is something I think that could be so useful.
And so Sunday, you're going to be having a bit of a rally to garner support for
this. Right. We have a state representative, a bunch of healthcare providers coming down. In fact, if anyone is interested, if anyone wants to sign up, any musicians, you get a discount for just signing up. Instead of donating, you get a discount just to come down and show your support and hear about what's going on.
So there's a lot going on at Hotel Congress this weekend, including a good cause on Sunday night. Music from a ton of bands. We'll have a complete schedule posted online at our website at KUAZ.org. Now I think we're just going to turn it over to Al Perry and hear a song.
Are you sure you want to do that?
Well, we've got the time. Why not?
Okay. If you told me lie down in the freeway, I'd gladly do it. Hold out any hoop and baby, I'll jump through it. I'd gladly eat the dirt from the ground you walked on. Cut my heart out of my chest for you to stomp on. You make the rules, baby, and I play the fool. Nothing that I wouldn't do just to get to spend one night with you. I haven't eaten, haven't slept for days. This morning a total stranger offered me his spare change. I'm not concerned about the problems of the world. Just want to spend my time trying to get next to you. Girl, you make the rules, baby, and I play the fool. Nothing that I wouldn't do just to get to spend one night with you. You make the rules, baby, and I play the fool. Nothing that I wouldn't do just to get to stay up all night with you.
There's a schedule of all the bands, films, and goings-on at this weekend's HOCO 2007, plus another tune from Al Perry, online at KUAZ.org. And now we'll take a moment to see what's coming up this weekend and next week around town as we look at the Arizona Spotlight Arts Calendar. This is the last weekend for the live theater workshops run of The Seven-Year Itch. Performances are tonight and tomorrow at 7:30, also a Sunday matinee at 3 o'clock. The Top Hat Theater Club takes you to the third smallest town in Texas. Greater Tuna continues this weekend. Performances tonight and tomorrow with a Sunday matinee at 3. On stage for kids, the Top Hat Theater Club has What the Monster Ate for Lunch, Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock. While the live theater workshop presents Rumble in the Jungle, A Tarzan Tale, that's this Sunday at 1. Next week is Opera Appreciation Week, and in honor, the Tucson Children's Museum will lead daily activities focused on music and art appreciation beginning at 2:30 p.m. That's September 4th through the 9th. Next week, the UA School of Art presents historian, writer, actress, and singer Joanna Frew performing Garden of Roses, which looks at the rose's importance as a symbol throughout human history. That's at the Moroni Theater next Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. Also next week, Rhythm and Roots presents slack key guitar legend Led Ka'apana, accompanied by hula dancers at the Berger Performing Arts Center. The show is next Friday evening, September 7th at 7:30. And don't forget, the 2007 Tucson Film and Music Festival is taking place throughout the weekend. All the screenings and events are taking place at the Rialto Theater at 318 East Congress downtown. Tonight at 7:30, Scott Walker, 30th Century Man, makes a debut, with The Friends of Dean Martinez scheduled at 9:30. Tomorrow afternoon at 3:30, a music video program featuring many Tucson favorites and Q&A with filmmakers will be featured. Once again, the 2007 Tucson Film and Music Festival at the Rialto this weekend. That's Arizona Spotlight for this week. As always, thank you for listening. Arizona Spotlight is a production of KUAZ Radio from the University of Arizona and is produced in the KUAZ studios by Jim Blackwood. Our executive producer is Peter Michaels. Most of the music heard on today's program, including our theme, was written and performed by Calexico. Audio archives of our past shows, as well as podcasting of Arizona Spotlight, are available online at KUAZ.org. I'm Mark McLemore.